I have 6 o'clock, so we can call the meeting to order, the September 7th virtual meeting of the East Select Board. And the first order of business is to identify callers. I'm Brian DeVries. I see Susan Lively here.
Here.
Hilma's here.
Yep, Hilma's here.
I see Ken Rock. I don't see everybody, so why don't you, I see Barbara Gordon.
Yeah. Present, and so is David.
David, Pat.
Here and recording.
Yeah, Sarah Carlton.
I think Ken or Budge will introduce me. I was working with their committee.
Yes, I in your name. So who else is here?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes. We can hear.
Hi, this is Beth Flaherty. I'm not familiar with Zoom, so I'm not sure how to mute and unmute. Can somebody tell me how to do that?
There's a little microphone symbol on your, it's either next to your photo on the...
I'm on a landline telephone. Is it possible?
What's the...
Star 6.
Star 6. Okay, thank you.
I think.
Let's try it.
Okay, we got everyone?
Yes, I believe so.
Okay. So we'll review the agenda next. Sue, did you have anything to add?
I did. We need to talk about future meeting dates.
Okay.
And then I have some things that are followed up to our last meeting, but they might be covered as we go through the agenda. So it's just things I don't want us to forget about.
There also is a meeting with someone from the state library board who's coming on Friday. And I think, Sue, you knew about it.
Yep.
And I'm probably not going to be able to make it. So if it was possible for you, that would be great.
Deb had talked to me. She just hadn't confirmed whether you could be there yet or not.
And no, I'm not likely to be able to. So that was the only thing that I had to add. And I guess we'll review the minutes of August 31st.
You want to do August 23rd first?
If I had it in front of me, I would. But
oh, I'm sorry.
I can get it up here. Okay. Sue, did you have any comments on that?
Yeah, a couple of things. Under the Council on Aging update in the second paragraph, right down toward the bottom, you say the board expressed its desire. I wonder if you need to put select board in there just so that people aren't confusing the Council on Aging board with the select board, just to clarify who's saying what.
Yeah.
And on the top of page 2, in the first line, it said the select board had a policy for making policy. Which I think is taking the policy thing one step too far.
Appointments.
It was supposed to be appointments. And in that third line, I thought you should take out the word for. It just sounded better.
Including volunteers.
Yep.
Okay. Yep.
And I think that was all I had.
I don't have anything to add to that. So you could make a motion to approve the minutes as amended.
So move.
Second. All in favor?
Sue, aye.
Brian, aye. So now we'll do the minutes of August 31st. Susan, do you want to start?
Yeah, I didn't have any corrections. I just had a question. In the report about the financial aspects, I wonder if it should be mentioned that we had 2 updated financial reports that we received.
Yep.
During that meeting, the one on cash flow and the one on fund summary. It just seemed like that should be included in there.
Is that all you have, Sue?
Yep.
I have a couple things. On the first paragraph, after financial standing, I would just take out the word and put a comma in. And under status of work completed, financial aspects, the third paragraph, I would take that whole first sentence out, except for each location is unique. And I would say, the Municipal Light Board was unable to give a firm estimate on the cost of installations because each location is unique.
Where are you, Brian?
Where it says financial aspects. talking about it's unclear why that sentence is there, you know, the context mm-hmm. of it. I would change that to say the municipal light board is unable to give a firm estimate on the cost of installations because each location is unique. I think that would be more understandable. If David disagrees with that, he should speak up right now.
Sorry, he had to leave the meeting briefly. Okay.
Yeah, I think it wasn't clear to me why we were saying, that sentence was there, other than we had this discussion during that part of the meeting. But mm-hmm. I think the point was that, a firm estimate on installations is difficult because of the uniqueness of each location.
Okay.
So, and the next paragraph was saying about receiving CAF II reimbursements. I thought it was fiscal year. I can't remember whether it was the fiscal year or the calendar year that we were referring to in that 2022, late 2022 or 2023. Does anyone remember that?
There he is. Maybe David's back. Maybe he can address that.
I'm sorry, I was on a call, but is there a question I can help with?
Yes, on the CAF II reimbursements, it said the town would not begin receiving them until late 2022 or 2023, and I couldn't remember if it was the fiscal year or the calendar year we were talking about.
Yeah, I was talking about calendar year.
Okay.
Fiscal year 2022 or 23, but it's really... Okay. But really, we don't know, and we haven't heard. We've tried to get more information. We haven't heard back yet. So okay. We'll let you know.
So it is calendar.
Yeah. But it's definitely, I would say, definitely after this current fiscal year, which is sort of our concern.
Okay. And then under ARPA funding, I would say it was stated that the select board needs to look at all the needs within the town to assess where there is the greatest need for these funds, period. And then I would say, if there is a shortfall on available assets, the town can obtain a note for short-term borrowing until more funds come in. And then I would just mention the BAN note, the borrowing on anticipation, which is what we've done in the past in these kind of situations. And then under invoices and billing, which is David explained that the MLB has since revised the process. And I wouldn't say they would like to do, I would just end it right there with a period. So that's all I have on that. All right, so let's see, we're a little early yet.
You want a motion?
Yes.
Please. I move we accept the minutes of August 31st as amended.
Second, all in favor.
Sue, aye.
And aye. We have a few minutes yet before the regionalization study team is on deck.
Hilma, did Robin have anything that she thought we could move forward until she got here?
If you go under other business, like the note to borrow, basically that is that it's time to renew some of the broadband borrowing. And so Chris has rolled that over into a new note, which if you folks can come sign tomorrow morning, that would be really great. I need to turn the documents over to her tomorrow afternoon so she can get them in. Okay. But basically that's it for that. If you wanted to vote to agree to sign the note, have it in the record, you could do that.
So you want to make the motion?
So move.
Second, all in favor.
Sue, aye.
Brian, aye.
Thank you. The next item, the recap on broadband meeting, and I don't know if, not that Robin had anything in particular, she just thought if there was anything left over from last Tuesday's meeting that you folks wanted to discuss?
There was the email from David Gordon that explained the discrepancy between the amount paid out, that one figure included the retainage which shouldn't have been included because it hasn't actually been paid yet. And I, that note, that letter is in our email. Mm-hmm. To see what, which page it's on.
I think it was in the first one, wasn't it? Thanks for the quick response on that, David.
Yeah, it's, the discrepancies between cell 18 paid to date for tri-wire labor listed as $618,648.67 should have been $587,716.25 because of the retainage that's held back. So the correct amount is $587,716.25.
And that was the number on David's sheet, yeah. Right? Yeah.
Yeah. I suppose we want to wait. Oh, we want to wait. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say there were a couple of other questions I think he was researching. I didn't know if he was here tonight to try to give us an answer to those other questions.
Right, he's here.
I'm here, but I have no answers yet on those. Okay. Still working on some of those. I'm here in case there are any other questions.
All right, thanks.
I'll start, but go down to Green Communities update. I had a meeting with Roger Harris from Rise Engineering scheduled for Thursday morning to review the work with Carson Ovett, but Carson has not been responsive, so the meeting has to be canceled until we can get a hold of him, because there's a certain portion of the work that he would need to do. And I told him that I was going to be away next week. So if he needed to get access, I told Roger if he needed to get in next week that he should contact Hilma or to arrange to have the building open. It would be like 8:30 in the morning, 9 o'clock, something like that. And Hilma, did you have anything to add about the payment of the bill for this, solar feasibility study? We got that letter from the state.
Yes, I know. I think we're all set with, other than I need to get all the paperwork together and file it, which I'll be doing this week.
Well, that ate up 2 minutes. No.
Well, Robin, on Salt Shed, Robin said that she's still waiting on some figures from one of the contractors she had reached out to, and that she had recontacted them again today, requesting the figures that she's looking for. She's gotten some of the information, but she was kind of waiting to, you know, to get all of it to compile a report.
We don't have anything further on the Hilltown Theater lease. I mean,
not really, other than in my report, in my town coordinator report, Robin and I met with Jonathan and I gave a recap of our meeting. So I don't know if you want to go over that now or you want to wait till my report or.
Okay. Yeah, we can wait, and maybe Robin is here too. Well, we'll be here by then.
Yeah. Okay.
Do we have anything to say about the Board of Health member vacancies?
Well, basically, I think Robin's thought was if the two of you would be willing to hold off on that so that the Board of Health could actually review the other resume that had come in.
Okay. And the firehouse, I think, is referring to the mildew situation there, mold and mildew.
Yeah. And I think Robin did want to talk about that a little bit when she gets into the meeting.
Okay.
The mask, the review of the mask requirement.
Uh-huh.
We haven't changed it, so
right.
So we're all set there, right?
Well, I mean, I guess it's, you know, what I understand is that, and Barbara can correct me if I'm wrong, but with the information that was provided and the email that Jean sent, you know, this is the county public health had written that document that they were offering to all the towns that they work with to provide kind of a standardized approach to mask wearing policy at this point. You know, in terms of the requirement for municipal buildings, it parallels exactly what you folks have passed and reaffirmed over the past months. This Board of Health policy, if they indeed pass it at their meeting tomorrow, will also require mask wearing inside like all public buildings, you know, not that we have like stores and a YMCA or that kind of thing, but that would be included as well.
Is there anything else that you wanted to, I see Barbara had her hand up there. Go ahead, Barbara.
As I understand it, the only change that this universal mask mandate would impose in Heath, because we do not have stores or businesses or other public accessible buildings, unlike a lot of our surrounding communities, which do have business districts and whatnot, I think that it would impose a change upon what I understand to be the current policy of the Building Use Committee regarding private rentals of municipal buildings. So my understanding of the current policy in Heath is that if municipal related groups are using the municipal buildings, they need to comply with your masking and distancing policies. But if a private party were to rent one of our spaces, they would not have to. The universal mask mandate would require that they follow masking, even as a private group using a municipal building. So any place where the public might gather indoors in a publicly accessible space, people would need to be masked.
Okay. Hilma, did you have like a recap or anything that you wanted to give of the MVP meeting that you went to this week?
Well, before we move on, I think Jean was asking, like, do you folks have, a recommendation or anything? You know, it's up to the Board of Health to pass this.
Right.
However, it's just, do you want to offer any opinion, any input? And if you don't, that's fine too. But
it looks pretty close to what we're already doing. And, you know, the case that Barbara brings up would have to be added to our building use policy if we adopt this. So
if they adopt it.
Yeah, if they adopt it.
They adopt it.
All right. So I have nothing else to offer on that.
Okay. I just figure, even though Barbara's here, I just figured, you know, I would, tomorrow morning, I would send out kind of like an official response to let the Board of Health know.
Okay.
So do we want to tell them that we agree that it should happen? Is that what you're saying?
If that's your opinion, yes. If your opinion is do whatever you want, then that's it. But I just want to know, are you going to issue an opinion or not?
My opinion is you should do it.
Yeah, mine as well. And then Robin will be here in a few minutes.
Okay. So you got 2 out of 3. Yeah,
and she was fine with it.
Yeah. Okay, good.
Okay. So basically the select board are supportive of the Board of Health moving forward.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
You want to vote or is that?
No, that's okay. I'll take you at your word. How's that?
But was there anything else that you wanted to say about the MVP meeting that you went to?
Well, again, I wrote a summarization in my town coordinator report, but I thought it went very well. I thought there was a lot of enthusiasm from the participants that were there. And, you know, we're in the process of kind of developing a calendar for the meetings that will follow this initial kickoff meeting.
Hilma, how is the membership of that group determined? Can it be anybody who wants to go, or is there supposed to be a representative from each one of our different boards, or Is there a system that?
Both. It's very loose. It's not like, I want to say it doesn't have the restrictions like, say, a town board of or committee where there's a specific number of people and a quorum and all that. It's not like that at all. It is strongly recommended that there is representation from, I want to say, the major players in town, like, for example, the select board, the board of health, the planning board, conservation commission, fire department, police department, you know, emergency services, even like Council on Aging, you know, and other ones, but it's open wide to anyone. And it's kind of the broader the cross section of involvement and participation, the more they like it, the more thorough and well-rounded of a plan is developed. And one of the things that we talked about for a period of time in terms of like, who else can we get involved in this was to see if we can get like any of our school age youth involved. Like, is there a way to get young people involved because it's their future, whether it's Heath or, you know, the environment or whatever you want to look at, it's their future. And what do they want their future world to look like? So, yeah, it's pretty much whoever would like to come. And if they can only come for one of the meetings, fine. If they can come for some of them or all of them, that's fine too.
All right, thank you. It's 6:30.
Yeah. So Ken is here. Budge here too.
Yep.
Okay.
Bob.
Yep. You got the whole team.
Yeah, yeah. You got the whole crew, plus a special guest. And Brian and Susan, I'd be happy to introduce the crew and then launch into our presentation with you. So the first four of us, yeah, are rather familiar faces at one point in time or another. We all either are or were school committee members. Barbara Rode is a member of the Heath Regionalization Study Team. Ken Rock is a member of our Heath Regionalization Study Team, and I'll give Ken credit for doing the yeoman's work on the development of the slides that we're going to be sharing with you. And even though his screen says Susan, we are stuck with Bob Bruin as the person we're going to talk with this evening. Hey, Bob. I would like to take a moment to just introduce Sarah Carlton, who is one of the primary consultants that we've been using after our receipt of this 191 grant. And Sarah is a retired DESE employee with a large background in working with the consolidation of various databases into data study tools that are very useful for folks, in particular, looking at regionalizations. Funny thing about that. But pulling together information from a variety of sources, Department of Revenue, DESE, and so forth, and integrating it into combined tools. And Barbara's been doing some of that same work for us. And it's been incredibly valuable. Barbara will be sharing some of that information in our later slides. And Bob, Ken, myself, and Sarah, and Barbara will be sharing the presentation to you. And so here we go.
Can you all see the presentation?
Yes.
Yeah. It's going to be difficult for those who are on phones.
We'll do our best to read each one.
All right, good.
And we haven't rehearsed this, so you may hear a little bit of who's doing this slide. Bojo, are you doing this one?
I certainly can. I'll introduce everything. what were our key questions? One of our first things we had to decide was, well, basically, is it in the interests of Heath to regionalize with Hallamont on a kindergarten or pre-kindergarten through sixth basis? Or is it better to remain a full member of the Mohawk Trail Regional School District? Those are the basic questions we've got. There are a lot of sub-questions related, but that's kind of what we got. We get to slide four. I believe that Bob was going to take over on slides 4 and 5.
I better unmute, huh?
You need to unmute, yes.
So what would the process be in order for Heath to regionalize with Holloman? Heath would have to partially withdraw from the Mohawk District in the K6 section. The OPEB cost would be calculated and a payment plan created. We began discussions on that and have not necessarily finished all of that. But the Mohawk Trail regional agreement would have to be changed. All of the towns involved are involved. And so we would need a go-ahead from all of the towns in the district. So they would have to vote to approve any change in the regional agreement. And of course, this withdrawal by Heath would be one of those things that they would have to agree to. Then Heath would have to join the Holloman district, and it would be a 3-town district of Charlemont, Holly, and Heath, and would all need to approve this in their respective towns. So you have Mohawk approval, but you also have the 3 individual towns that would have to give their approval. And then the Commissioner of Education has to look at the plan that we came up with and approve the 2 revised regional districts, both the Mohawk one and the whatever new district would be created. And that would have to be done prior to any town meeting votes. We couldn't just vote on it without getting the go-ahead permission. So what happens if he doesn't regionalize with Holloman? The tuition agreement between Mohawk Trail and Holloman expires as of June of 2022. Heath will remain a full K-12 member of the Mohawk Trail district. Heath Elementary Schools students would attend Mohawk Trail schools. We're not sure yet which school or schools that would be. It would have to be negotiated. Heath Elementary students would still be able to attend Holloman through the school choice program if and only if Holloman School Committee voted to accept them. That's true of any school choice decision by any school or any district. Once students were accepted under school choice, they are guaranteed enrollment in the future. So it's not 1 year and out. They could stay if they wanted to the completion of the grade level, which in this case would be 6th.
So as Bob just mentioned, the very old, actually older than I am, Holloman Regional School District Agreement needs to be revised, or would need to be revised. And this is something that the Holloman Regional Study Group has been working on for years. And a lot of it is just plain old, straightforward boilerplate, simple stuff. But there are 2 governance, in other words, voting related issues that have emerged, they've persisted, and they're not resolved. So we're going to share with you the rub first, and then go into a lot of other background data. So the 2 issues are, how do you pass the budget at the town meetings? And secondly, how do you approve any motion made at a school committee meeting? The background, school committee members would be 2-2-2. Currently at Holloman, it's 3-3. Keep 6 members, 2-2-2. Each committee member's vote would be proportional to their town's population. This took a long time to discuss. The original intent was each person had their own vote. It was not until years into the process that we got a clear letter from Desi Legal that it became apparent, and we were able to push through, no, we have to comply with the Constitution, one person, one vote, and we have to use weighted voting. All right. But exceptions persisted. And so instead of a budget being approved by 2/3 of the town meeting votes, which is the state law, the agreement would require all 3 towns vote yes. That requires special legislation. At the school committee level, yes, you have weighted voting. But if you don't have both members from each town, from any of the towns. Voting yes, the motion fails. So in essence, requiring that all three towns approve instead of the two-thirds required by law, you give any town who chooses veto power, which doesn't exist in any other district in the Commonwealth. Again, special legislation required. The provision for at least one school committee member from each town voting yes gives an amazing level of veto power in certain areas. When we get to, this is slide number 9, I think when we get to the next slide, I'll direct your attention first to column C. Okay, Ken's moving us along. We'll talk about the top part of the page first. Just look at column C. So you've got two people from Charlemont, two people from Hollidge, from Heath voting. You add up their votes. That's the way weighted voting works. If you have a motion to do whatever, and you look at column C, you have over 85% weighted vote yes, that the motion would fail. That's a little bit unusual. I have to admit, I have served on many school committees, many school functions. I've never seen that. Please take your time at some point and go through, look for that particular dark color there. Those are the cases where you have a weighted vote that says yes, and yet the motion fails. The top part of the page is simply showing where the weighted votes come from. It's based on town population. And you have Charlemont, obviously, with the largest, over almost 55% of the population. Hawley at almost 15% of the population. Heath at almost 31% of the population. And so you just derive your votes from there. For those of us who have experience in weighted voting scenarios, and I would say that Bob, Barbara, Ken and I do, I'm worth, and so is Barbara, about 3.5 at a Mohawk Trail meeting. The larger towns, Buckland, Shelburne, Coleraine, are worth about 9.5. And Suzanne, I know you're in the meeting. You're only like 2 or something. But you know what?
1.7. Suzanne,
what is it, Suzanne?
1.7.
Okay, I was close. Suzanne was vice chair of this school committee for a long time. That weight does not say everything about who and what you bring to the table. This is one of the rub points. Presented on August 23rd to the Hollamont Heath Regionalization Study Group. We spent about 2 hours debating this. There was no give on this particular question. Again, it's a very detailed, comprehensive chart. It shows every possible voting combination. If you take the time to look at it in detail, it's sort of interesting what it shows. Ken, we can move on. That's what I need to say about this. This is the rub point.
Thank you, Budge. Thank you, Bob. We're going to pivot now to providing some background information on demographics, enrollment, and quite a bit about finances. And we understand that some of this will seem sort of larger picture things, but we think over the long run to figure out what's the best strategy for Heath, you also have to figure out what's the best strategy for Mohawk and maybe for the county as a whole. So you'll see we take, in some cases, a county view and then a district-wide view and then a town view. And broken down into demographic trends, wealth of towns, Chapter 70 funding prospects, relative spending levels of Mohawk Trail and Hollamont, and what we think the fiscal impact of regionalization or not regionalizing might be on Mohawk Trail, Hollamont, and Heath, all three. Sarah Carleton's going to step in and do this section on declining enrollment.
Okay, I'm very proud I remembered to unmute before I started talking. That rarely happens. So you want to give me the next slide? There you go. So, as I'm sure you all know, declining enrollment has been a driving force in Franklin County and other rural counties in the state, and it's a continuing problem. And we'll show you some of the data that shows how the decline has been continuing for a while. It affects both education and finances. As you try to cut program to match the smaller number of students, you're obviously losing something educationally. If you don't cut anything, then your cost per student essentially rises and rises. So there's pressure on budgets to come up with money, even though there's fewer students. So the enrollment that we're going to look at here, I am going to pause and just say there's several different ways to count students that DESE uses. And I know it can be confusing because there are different numbers, but we'll just try and be very clear which numbers we're using. This is foundation enrollment, and it's the basis of allocation of Chapter 70 funds. And what's significant about it is that it is a count based on students that live in towns. So this is resident students, and it's by town. And then for regional districts, it gets rolled up into the regional allocations. But what you can see from this basic chart, we have data from the data is from file that's online for every year in Chapter 70. It's called the Complete Summary File. And then there's a worksheet called Regional Allocation, which has the foundation enrollment for each town that's in a region. So we've pulled the data from there. And you can see that although there's little blips in every single one of these, that overall the direction is down.
Sarah, I just want to make sure that everyone understands these are K-12 numbers. These are not just the elementary school numbers.
All the students that live in the town.
Yep.
And go to public schools.
Yes.
All right. So this is the table as opposed to the graph that you just saw. And the one thing I want to point out about it is that there are differing changes in different towns. Charlemont, for instance, bounces around not too far from 164 down to 159. And then it begins to go down 159, 150, 140, 128. So that's a trend that seems to be accelerating right now. Holly has a sudden high year in FY16 of 44. Again, a little inexplicable. I'm not sure what happened. Sometimes there's blips in data. Perhaps there were, for some reason, 10 more students than there have been. Then other than that, it bounces around in the 32 range and then finally begins to go down in FY22 at 27. And Heath, again, goes up a little bit and stays in the same general range for quite a while and then begins to tail down in FY22. So it's different patterns, but the net effect is that there's decline. And if the next slide would actually give you a good way to look at it, this is the foundation enrollment, all the resident students going to public schools, for the three towns added together. And that's where you can see that the combination of the declining tendency means that the total for the three towns and the district that they would make with their K-6 students would be tending to decline. So now we're gonna hand it back to Ken, who's gonna talk about numbers which are counted in a different way. You can maybe explain that briefly, Ken, from the way that we were looking at foundation.
Actually, Sarah, if you wanted to do this one,
okay,
sure. That would be great. So
this is also resident students who lives in the town. The difference is that this is October 1 data that were students that were enrolled somewhere on October 1st of for instance, 2021. And the foundation enrollment counts residents slightly differently, including that they're referring to the prior year so that they can do the calculations before this October 1 data is available. So slightly different numbers, but the same basic intent here, which is that we're talking about the residents. And so what you can see is that you have a few children that go to, students that go to Franklin County and you're a member there. So that's one resident member group. And then there's resident members at Mohawk Trail. And there's students who are going in all grades just about, but particularly in the higher grades who are going to schools in Mohawk Trail. Then we have a few students, one student going to the virtual district and another student from Hatfield choicing in. And then Roe, there's a fair, choicing out to, I'm sorry. These are students going out to these districts. So Choice is leaving Heath, going to the Greenfield virtual district, leaving and going to Hatfield, going to Roe schools. What we noticed in particular was that the number of students choicing to Roe was relatively high, 14 students. That's a noticeable fraction. Couple at the charter school, and then there's a couple of tuition agreements with Conway, but particularly with Hallamount, which you all know about. So that's how you add up the different groups of students across all of the residents that you have, where they go to school and how they go there.
So I can pick it up from here. So from there, we're looking specifically at where the students enrolled in Hallamont come from. And first, we'll just look at the numbers, and then later on, we'll come back to the fiscal implications of these numbers. But we've got 3 years, 2019, 2020, and 2021. And if we just go to the yearly average and the percent of the total, Charlemont has close to 50% of the students, Hawley about 10%, Heath 23%, and choice students, most of whom are choicing in from Mohawk Trail towns, other towns, almost 20%. And we'll come back to the implications of that. We're going to look at Chapter 70 data, a couple of different aspects of it. And the first is the comparative wealth of towns. In the Chapter 70 formula, they use a way to measure comparative wealth, which is based on a combination of a town's property wealth and income. And then that is applied to the foundation budget, which is the budget that it takes to educate the kids who are resident in the town, according to Department of Education calculation. And the percentage of the combined effort yield, the percentage of the foundation budget is capped at 82.5%. So all towns receive some Chapter 70 aid. This is a quick snapshot of Franklin County. And the blue bar shows this measure of wealth. And then the pink bar shows the percentage that DESE calculates they have to pay towards the foundation budget. And right at the top, you see Roe, Irving, Leyden, Leverett exceeding the 82.5% cap. And way over on the right, you see by this measure, the less wealthy towns, Wendell, Heath, Greenfield, Montague, Bernardston, and Charlemont. This is just to put the relative wealth of the towns we're talking about in perspective. And you see Hawley is somewhere in the middle, actually high middle by this measure. If we just look at Mohawk Trail and Hallamont towns, you see, of course, Roe is off the chart. Their combined effort yield is 326%. It's capped at 82.5%. Ashfield is 90, capped at 82.5. And then down here, again, in the corner, you've got Charlemont and Heath. By this measure, the least wealthy towns in these three districts. And Hawley, somewhat comparable to Ashfield and Plainfield. I'm actually going to hand this one back to Sarah as well. We wanted to look at the comparative fiscal health of the towns, and there's not a strict measure for that. So we did our best to sort of drawing from DOR data, create a measure. And I'll just stress when one town regionalizes with other towns, it's something like a business partnership. So you need to go in with your eyes open and with some clear idea of the fiscal health of the towns that you would be regionalizing with. So Sarah, can you?
Okay. First of all, the first three variables are a little bit about context. So population, as you know, these towns, Hawley is much smaller than either town, but Heath is also just over half of Charlemont. Charlemont's definitely the biggest town by quite a bit. Resident public school students roughly reflect that. The percentage of students as a percentage of the local population, Heath is actually the highest. They're not too far apart, but Heath is the highest of those at 14%. So then we look at some of the finance measures. So income per capita is, you know, sort of self-explanatory, but what's striking here is how much lower Heath's income per capita is. It goes 21,000 something for Charlemont, 19,000 for Hawley, and 13,800 for the residential tax rate is the highest in Heath. And so to raise the taxes that you want to raise in Heath, you have to tax at a relatively higher rate against property values. The education spending as a percentage of the town budget, for reasons that might be hard to suss out quickly, it's a much higher percentage in Charlemont, and it's a more similar percentage, about a third in Hawley and Heath. And then free cash and stabilization as a percentage of town budget. These are DOR numbers, and free cash and stabilization funds are both reserves where towns have been able to set aside dollars that were appropriated but not spent in some prior year or years. And it's not a specific measure in any regular way, but what's valuable about looking at it in this way as a percentage of town budget is that it just gives you an idea of the reserve capacity. You know, if a bad year came along, Holly would have a fair amount of reserves proportional to their budget to help cushion a year or more of tight budgets, where Charlemont is very tight at only 9%, and Heath is somewhat better at almost 20% in their free cash and stabilization funds, which the town controls. And the last measure, the DESI measure, it's the ones that that Ken's been showing you, basically the target local share, which is varies across the towns, with Holly having the highest target local share, reflecting overall property and income being greater there. So the least wealthy town would have the lowest target local share, and that's Heath in this case.
Thank you, that's great. And we're in the process of developing yet another measure, and this is, we don't have the data yet, but this is our attempt to sort of measure the relative fiscal health, not of towns, but of school districts. So we did, I did hear in a Holomont school committee meeting, a TMS report that they had some concerns about the sustainability of the Holomont budget. So with lots and lots of help from Sarah, we started to look into reserves, and the expenditure and revenue picture and things such as school choice were not painting a clear picture. So we decided instead to look at end of year balances, which are generally reported on an end of year audit. And our attempt here is just to list all of the reserves that a school district might have. Not all of these are reported to DOR, so there's no standard reporting tool for these, but when we get this information, we'll certainly share it with everyone. Again, this is when you join a regional school district, you wanna know something about the fiscal health of that school district. And this chart is dependent upon the previous chart. School choice, dollars net balance, reserves as a percentage of the budget, combined reserves. We can't calculate any of these things until we have the actual numbers. So. This is a work in progress. Again, just to reiterate the obvious, by the measure of wealth that DESI uses, Charlemont and Heath are the least wealthy Mohawk Trail Holomont towns. Ashfield, Hawley, Plainfield, Shelburne have somewhat similar levels of relative wealth. As Heath citizens, it says to us we have to be extremely careful what kind of business arrangements we enter, i.e. regionalization, because we don't have a lot of money to spare. The next thing we looked at is the revenues of school districts, and we're using a measure called actual net school spending. All of this data is drawn from a report that DESI updates regularly called profiles.xls, which shows the breakdown of Chapter 70A, local contribution, and local contributions above required, and also hold harmless funds. So we have a way of breaking it down so we can see this actual net school spending in four component parts. Again, we'll provide all this material to you so you'll be able to look at it closely, but this is the picture for Franklin County school districts. And this is a combination of Chapter 78 and local contributions. It does not include grants, transportation, and some other categories, but it's a pretty telling measure. And again, down on the low end of the scale, Orange, Greenfield, Mohawk Trail, Bill Montague, Holomont, in the least wealthy, and of course, Roe, Irving, New Salem, Wendell, up a little higher. Franklin County is a one of a kind because it's a technical school. So in order to really understand that, you'd have to compare it to other regional voc-tech schools, which we're not doing in this set of figures. This is just the table that the next chart is going to show you. And this is the one I'll spend just a minute on. This is actual net school spending for Roe, Holomont, and Mohawk Trail. And this is all based on FY, is 21 or
23?
21. Thank you. And to our surprise, we found that Holomont is their actual net school spending is actually more than Mohawk Trails. But what jumps out to me is the difference in hold harmless aid. This is on a per pupil basis. Mohawk is receiving in this year $2,320 per student in Chapter 70 hold harmless aid. And then the local contribution on the assessment for each student credited or charged to a town is about $3,000. In Holomont, the hold harmless aid is only about $774. This is a consequence usually of declining enrollment. but the local contribution per FTE is substantially higher than Mohawk Trails. It's for this year, $43.88. So again, what is the data telling us? Mohawk Trail has a lot of hold harmless aid compared to Hallamont. Hallamont's actual net school spending is actually higher than Mohawk Trails, as is their local contributions above required. And a little side note, if you look at the red or pink portion, that's foundation aid as calculated by the Department of Education on a per pupil basis. And generally it reflects student need. So if you have economically disadvantaged students, they get a higher calculation of foundation budget. So in some sense, the per pupil foundation budget for Hallamont being higher than Mohawk Trails is some indication of greater student. And we're gonna stay with hold harmless aid for a minute because we think it has some real implications regionally and also legislatively. It's grandfathered aid, it's over and above what the foundation formula would dictate that you get. It's a consequence of declining enrollment and from the legislature's decision on an annual basis that no district will get less than they got the prior year. I think you're probably all familiar with the Student Opportunity Act, which is we're in the second or third year of that, dramatic revision of Chapter 70 funding. It's substantially increasing aid to the least wealthy districts in the Commonwealth. And then for districts that would see no increase under that, there's a per pupil minimum. Why is this important? This is a chart showing the comparison between hold harmless aid, this is jumping to the next fiscal year, FY22, and the $30 per student minimum aid. If you're receiving hold harmless aid, that effectively absorbs any increases in Chapter 70 aid that you would otherwise see under the increases built into the Student Opportunity Act. Why is this important? The implication here is it's unlikely that Hallamont or Mohawk Trail are going to see significant increases in Chapter 70 funding for the foreseeable future because of the levels of hold harmless aid they're already receiving. In other words, it's not likely that the state is going to step in and save us in a big way with substantial increases in Chapter 70 aid. It may be that the Rural Coalition can advocate for other kinds of increases, but given the formula as it's written in the Student Opportunity Act, the prospect is limited for increases in Chapter 78. So I'll just read the second bulleted point, which is long. It's almost a paragraph, and I didn't find a way to say it more briefly, but I'll just read it. Absent efficiencies gained through regionalization or significant collaboration, future costs of normal inflationary increases in school budgets will either result in increased local assessments or will necessitate reductions in educational services. This is what Sarah was talking about before, the dilemma that we're in when you have declining enrollment. I've worked in districts and dealt with their budgets, and they run anywhere from 2.5% to 3.5%, 4% inflationary increases through teacher contracts and so on each year. If your Chapter 78 is flat, which is what we're describing, and inflationary increases are pushing your core costs up, you're faced with a dilemma of either cutting services or increasing local assessment. If we're looking at a town like Heath, we're already perilously close to the taxation limits, and we're not the only one. So, and lastly, I think everyone's aware of this, any reduction or restriction of hold harmless aid would really be harmful to many Franklin County school districts. Whether it's fair that we have it, the removal of it would create very difficult situations for our schools. The last big piece of this is to compare how kids are enrolled in schools. We know if you're a district member, you go to those district schools, and that's, we'll just call it district membership. But the other two ways we're looking at it today are tuition agreements and school choice. Right now, Mohawk Trail has a tuition agreement with Hallamont for Heath Elementary students. The negotiated price this year is $11,500. It expires in June of next year. School choice, which could be called parental school choice or familial school choice, is set by law at $5,000. It's always available to families if the receiving school has opted into the program. Why is this important? You'll see what the impacts of this are, but First, just a data note or two. This is all modeled on FY21. We're assuming that the amount of Chapter 70 aid does not change, and we're going to look at district membership, school choice, and tuition agreement. All of this is derived from the DESE profiles.xls workbook. Transportation costs are not included, sped costs are not included, and choice costs are limited to base rate, that it does not include sped cost chargebacks. So just to bring it home, with apologies to the airlines, you know, you've all read articles about you'd be sitting next to somebody and they have a much less expensive seat on the airline than you do. This is the easy way for me to think about it. You can have, and I look for classroom seats, but I like the airline picture instead. You can have three students side by side in the Hallamont school classroom. And we know there's no first class, economy class, et cetera, and business class. Once the kids get to school, they all get the services they need. But the choice seat brings in revenues of $5,000, the tuition seat $11,500, and the district member seat that we know from the actual net school spending over $18,000. Again, if we look back at our enrollment chart, you can do the mental math on this. The Charlemont and Hawley students are bringing in about $18,000 each, the Heath students about $11,500, and the choice students from other districts $5,000 each. Which brings us to why this is important for the finances of Mohawk Trail and Hallamont, and less so for the finances of Heath. This chart is comparing FY21, and it's the actual is the top line that says tuition, actual tuition agreement. It's bringing in $333,500 to Hallamont. What if all those students were choice students instead? Hallamont would see a reduction in their revenue of $188,500. What if instead Heath joined Hallamont and Hallamont assessed Heath for the same amount that they're assessing Charlemont and Hawley now, which is an open question because they might choose to reduce costs or reduce assessments instead. But just using that metric, Hallamont would have an increase in revenue of $193,575. So by this measure, and it's a rough measure, this is kind of a back of the envelope calculation, the status of Heath students in Hallamont to Hallamont represent a swing in the neighborhood of $300,000. And for a budget the size of Hallamont's, that's really critical. If we look at it from the Mohawk Trail perspective, it's pretty much the mirror image of that. It's a little bit different because actual net school spending is different for the two districts. But right now they're paying $333,500 through the tuition agreement that was negotiated. If Heath returns to Mohawk, the tuition agreement ends, and if all of the parents chose to choice into Hallamont and Hallamont accepts them all, the cost to Mohawk would be reduced by $188,500. And really, that's probably a low estimate because it's reasonable to assume that many parents would not choice into Hallamont, but would just go to the designated Mohawk school. And that number of students times $5,000, that would represent even less revenue flowing, less of a cost to Mohawk Trail. If, and let me just go to the Heath. The impact on Heath is much less clear and decisive, and the level of urgency is much less. I will say using this calculation, which is based on the Hallamont actual net school spending, the local contribution required and above local, Heath might pay a little bit more at Hallamont, but you could easily plug in different numbers and show Heath paying a little bit less. It's a tough number to come up with. And we know that FY21 is a COVID year. To some extent, all bets are off for FY21, and we're going to have to track the years as the students come back and so on. But the bottom line for this is that the fiscal impact on Heath, whether or not Heath is a member of Hall, it's not clear that there's a benefit, but there's certainly, you're not going to see the big swings that you're seeing for both Mohawk Trail and Hallamont. And again, we can come back to any of this if you want to. This leads us to say that, and this is based on site visits to schools, if Heath regionalizes with Hallamont, Heath school children are going to get, elementary school children are going to get a good education. If we don't, regionalized, but Mohawk Trail extends the tuition agreement, the current arrangement will continue. If we do not regionalize with Holloman and Mohawk Trail does not extend the tuition agreement, these school children will receive a good education at Mohawk schools. So it's not so much a question of one education being significantly better than the other. And if we rejoin the Mohawk Elementary School, we know that some students will likely choice their kids to Holloman, where we believe they will receive a good education. So for us, we're not in crisis about this, but we need to make a decision. And with that, we're going to move into the opinion section now, or the conclusion section. And each of us has a slide that we're going to go through.
So that goes to me. Hi, I'm Barbara Road. So thank you, Ken, for all of the work, and Sarah for all of the data and pulling that slideshow together. There's still more information we can add, and we know there's more information that we can add, but we wanted to present to the Select Board our findings so far, as we are running into some roadblocks. As Budge was alluding to last week, there were some meetings that we were having difficulty in communicating some questions and getting some answers on an openness on the other side of our negotiating partners. So I kind of feel bad that there's a summary of findings on my slide, but I'm gonna walk through a few of these, most of these, with just a few points of, I come to this study team with the lens of a parent and a taxpayer. My other three colleagues on this study team, including Sarah, my other four, all have experience in the Department of Education and understanding all of these formulas. When I pay my taxes, or my parents pay their taxes and they're on a fixed income in their 80s in the town of Heath, I like to answer the question, what are the services we're getting for our money for the best education we can give our students? So the teeny tiny history of what brought me to study Holloman further, sitting on Mohawk Trail Regional School District School Committee, is I knew this decision was up and coming pre-COVID because Budge and Bob had been working hard on the study group. There was zero reason to pay attention at that time for me. But what sparked my curiosity to answer the question, what's going on with our students down at Holloman? And I want to preface everything I'm about to say with on the site visit and on witnessing Holloman and our central office pull it together through this extraordinary year of remote learning and pandemic. I think Holloman is a great school. I think they're doing a great job, and I think the families going there are served well. And none of this is a reflection on staff or administration or the families that go there. It's just, I sit in a chair that I have to make a decision, and it's an incredibly difficult decision. I am thinking very deeply that every single one of the numbers in the enrollment charts that you just witnessed is a student belonging to a family and a resident in our town. So I take that that stress, as my colleagues will know, I'm under stress over this. I take that, I just take the weight of this as it's enormous. So these are my recommendations, and I am open to all other recommendations, but I have to be honest in my findings. So I'm just gonna look down and read some of my notes. They are brief. But the current concerns that I am about to highlight do not fit in a graph that we can portray, as Ken just showed so beautifully. They're broader topics. So the principal of Holloman in the fall of 2020 notified the Heath families that they didn't fit in the internet hub. This is what led me to begin conducting my own behalf. I was curious how we didn't fit into the school that we are paying tuition to go into. So it was not necessarily the administration's fault for this. We were flying under a pandemic, but I was curious why the breakdown was Heath didn't fit and Charlemont and Holly did fit in the internet hub. This sparked an emergency to our town to produce an internet hub staffed by volunteers for students in need, adding additional cost and stress to our town during pandemic remote learning. You're all aware of that. Many of you worked on that. I thank the town of Heath for getting us through that. But that in and of itself sparked for me the age-old, does Heath belong somewhere? I was a Heath parent for four of my kids that went through six principals at the Heath Elementary School. I had nieces and nephews that were in other schools that didn't belong. You all know the history of belonging in Heath. It's an age-old problem. So for me, it's important that wherever we just, I want to see a sense of belonging for our town that we bring with our families' assets. We bring volunteerism. We bring amazing students with amazing abilities. And I do want to feel not only are we paying that we belong, but that we really are welcome. So that's important for me. So the concerns grew as I started attending remote meetings myself long before our study team was created. I went to a meeting that the Hallamont, we'll start with Hallamont budget instability on my bullet on the left concerns. So the budget presentation, the budget reporting described instability, words of crisis and unsustainability. There were direct cuts made affecting teacher to student ratio and to the negative. We were cutting a teacher as asked by the school committee and against the superintendent's recommendation at that point. And there were also questions, never answered, of course, but questions of the school committee of would the town support them and would the towns approve them and or disapprove of them? And if the towns were disapproving, what would happen to the school budget? So I did find a lack of knowledge, I guess, between the school committee and the town representatives that I just sparked my interest further sitting on Mohawk School Committee. That we frequently have town reports, that we know where our town select boards are sitting. And the next bullet, Hallamont percentile ranking. I was totally unaware until the Hallamont principal reported that they were in an intervention status, reporting that they were the lowest 10% of the Commonwealth on the DESE website. It was a concern. I'm not sure it still is a concern because there are definitely plans for improvement. And my other colleagues on this study team report that that's not as abnormal as I would think. But I think it's really important to include that we are measuring the success of the education that we're providing to our. Number three, Hallamont School Committee delay of hybrid option. The reason I chose this one was this is an example of what that veto power back where Budge was showing in our chart on that C, where one town could veto another, what a veto power could look like in the future and what the power could be. So the Hallamont School Committee delayed the hybrid option for half day in school opportunity for students when it was presented. It was presented in January. And I believe I have it in my notes. I believe it passed eventually in March. So the Hallamont School Committee delayed hybrid option for half day in-school opportunity for students when it was available for approximately 2 months over a dispute between their school committee and the superintendent. That ultimately created less in-person instruction for Hallamont students versus all other elementary schools in the area. So that's just a simple example of what a vote at school committee, how that can gridlock our students' education and totally affect our families in the long run. Finally, Hallamont communication challenge. I'm gonna try to be as brief and vague as possible on this. It's not going well. So Budge was at a meeting on 8/23, August 23rd, just last week, that what he presented questions on is non-conforming articles and the regional proposed agreement, and there was no give on the other side. What happened was I was scheduled to be at a meeting on 8/25 to discuss several other questions the Town of Heath study team had for the Hallamont study team. And at that meeting, we actually received an email from the chair the night prior that he was not going to attend the and pointed out several reasons why. But we continue to witness and experience challenges in education on something that is so paramount to choose for our future. So I'd like to move over to my findings. So after 6 months on our Heath study team, which I appreciate very much, everyone working together for the last 6 months every Thursday, reviewing the potential leaving of Mohawk Trail Regional School District K through 6 to regionalize with Hallamont School District. My observations and findings are as follows. Heath joining Hallamont could pose a fiscal risk that is directly linked to the next bullet. As Ken just suggested, there may not necessarily be an increase in cost to our taxpayers, but the future is completely unknown. And that's what I base this on. It is a risk because the next section is something that hasn't been brought up yet. Hallamont School Committee is exploring alternative central office options. So creating a larger divide. Further explanation of what that actually means. In the last several meetings at the Hallamont School Committee, it has come up from some of their present school committee members and even questioned by other of some of the other school committee members that sit on there that they're not totally understanding what the process is that is happening, but they are actively researching a complete removal from what we call the two district agreement, which shares our services between Mohawk Trail and Hallamont, of the superintendent, the director of special education, the financial management team, the facilities coordinator, transportation coordinator. All of that being said, with the Mohawk Trail school district, and they are looking to research, they're researching to join potentially the North Berkshire School Union. None of that do we have any interest on other than they're researching that. This is creating a larger divide of unknown future services for our students and unknown costs to our taxpayers. It was offered from a member that maybe Heath could save some money in this, and maybe that's true. But in our current status and for the foreseeable future, I'm not willing to stake our next generation of pre-K through K through six on maybe that will help. I think there are way too many variables in air to feel comfortable joining something that's actually going to be leaving what I've known to trust. So sitting on the Mohawk Trail School Committee, I do not think everything is perfect over there. I think we have a lot of work to do on improving our schools. It's a constant plan, but I do see stability there and a discussion there, and I see communication with towns, schools, and I feel more comfortable in staking the future in that direction than I do for all of the variables that I've just stated. So my final sentence, I do not feel it is in the best interest for our students, our families, or our taxpayers to leave Mohawk Trail and regionalize with Hallamont. So I do recommend staying with Mohawk Trail for the foreseeable.
Okay, I'm up next. I'm gonna take a little bit different approach, more historical and personal, and try to get through this as quick as possible. I would remind everybody that we had a heartbreaking choice to make when we chose to close the Heath School. What happened was there was great teamwork working with Mohawk, the Heath team and the Mohawk team, on an agreement. There was give and take. We were listened to, and we came to a consensus that Hallamont would be the best choice and that we would have a strong say in how our students would learn and live. And that was important to all of us. We had choices. We could have gone to other schools. When we were talking to Mohawk, we chose Hallamont. We stood up at town meeting to express our team's desire to have a shared experience for all our kids going to one school. The town voted overwhelmingly for that, in favor of that. I think maybe there was a hint of nostalgia in my heart when we were doing that, because school choice had already scattered our students to the wind, and it's not just in Heath, it is across the state. School choice has changed the way that things happen in schools. Maybe I didn't want to admit that, I don't know, but it's a problem. So what happened then was we, Budge and I, started meeting with the regionalization group from Hawley and Charlemont. And initially it was very easy. It always is. The low-hanging fruit got picked and things were going well. But then we got to the hard parts. And we were going to have to ask for support for special legislation. And we were starting to build a sense that maybe we should do that. Then we had a superintendency emergency followed by COVID. And maybe in some ways that was a good thing. It gave us a chance to step back and do some thinking. And then we worked to have that grant, which was giving us the solid information that we really needed. Not feelings, but solid information. But even with solid information, a consensus has been very hard to reach. So what's the tipping point for me? The tipping point for me in my decision was that recently, as Barbara alluded, it's become apparent that Hallamont was working to move away from a shared superintendency with Mohawk. From the beginning, the Mohawk district has been, in their dealings with Heath, have been thoughtful, reasonable, and helpful partners. Middle ground was always found. We talked, we came in from different sides on things, but we got to a point where we could agree and move forward. After giving us their support, the Mohawk district, it would be, I think, disrespectful of their good efforts, their considerations, to just kind of tip our hats and say goodbye and join a district that's looking to move away from Mohawk. I personally just couldn't do that. I couldn't urge us to join a new district that would do that. So I've spent lots of time at Hallamont in many different ways. And it's a wonderful, hardworking place that its students love. But right now, I can't recommend forming a three-town district at this time. Thank you.
Well, my turn. Bob and Barbara, thank you for your comments. It's really important. Bob took a little trip back in history. I'm going to try to keep this as brief as I can, but my bottom line is I am very unsettled and very conflicted at this moment. I'm going to go back to the early 1980s when I was first elected to the Heath School Committee. Yes, there was such a thing back then. We tuitioned our children to the Rowe Elementary School, town-to-town tuition agreement. I attended all of the Rowe School Committee meetings. I even participated with them on teacher negotiations. Of course, I was a non-voting member. It seems to be a trend in my past. Late 1980s, Rowe pressed a panic button because there was a growth of population in the town of Heath, particularly of young children. They limited our tuition agreement. We tried to negotiate a regional school district agreement. It would have been a sensible thing to do. We could have shared the cost of putting an addition onto that building. Sue Lively, who I know is still here, was a part of that team also. Long negotiations, not as long as these, I'll tell you, but long negotiations. My recollection is that when Heath Town Meeting voted, all but three people voted yes, it was defeated in Rowe. What are you going to do? What do you do to help Heath have solid education for its children? We built a school. That was the second choice of the Long Range Planning Committee. It was wonderful. It gave us so many years, 20 or so, of wonderful education for our children. But the concern was that a single little bitty town trying to fill a single little bitty school wasn't going to work. It didn't. Bob and I both served on the building committee for that school. In the end, we both served on the committee that had to take the vote to close it. Kind of stinks. Still trying to figure out where to put our kids. What are the realities? As both Barbara and Bob have mentioned, educationally, I'm an educator, classroom teacher, administrator. That's my entire career. I value what I see in terms of the education at Hallamont. As an educator, I know what I'm talking about. It's a good, solid education, great potential to expand and grow. And yes, they are dealing with student performance issues, and they are not the first school to ever do so. When I became the principal at Sanderson, we were doing the exact same things. It took the staff and I 2 years to turn it around and become one of the highest performing schools in the Commonwealth. BSE has just gone through a similar process. Yes, it's a concern. Yes, it's a process. Ken knows a heck of a lot more about it than I do. That's part of his day job, is helping school districts and schools figure this out. Cost risks, anytime you look at a little bitty district, you have the potential for a large cost. And the easiest one to explain to everybody is an out-of-district special education expenditure. If you only get to share it between two or three towns instead of among eight, the impact is far greater. If that little bitty district has virtually no reserves, it's a huge problem. So just things to be aware of. Proximity, fact of the matter is, Hallamont is closest for most of the kids in Heath. Not every kid, obviously, but most of them it is. Governance. These are those early slides that I said were the rub point. This continues to be a rubbing point. We've not seen give here. It's just, I've worked on enough different school committees and different organizations. I have never seen a demand that a veto power, particularly at the committee level, be in place. And there's no give. I don't know what else to say. I just, the two district plans, Bob and Barbara addressed that very well. Withdrawal from Mohawk, we talked about it quickly. If we were to continue to go that route, yes, we've had extensive talks with Mohawk Trail about a potential OPEB solution mechanism. We'd have to dust those talks off and see if they worked out and see what the numbers looked like for us. But there's a liability there. That's what OPEB is a liability. But most importantly to me is the education of our kids. And we need to figure out how to get information in the hands of the parents and the community members in Heath, and I think also in Charlemont and Hawley, and begin communicating with them about what's up. Our study team meets on Thursday. This will be this overall, where are we, decision will be one of our biggest conversations. It is a very, very difficult choice. Number of decades of trying to sort out how best to give Heath kids, elementary school kids, solid education. Man, it is still a moving target. Very unsettling. That's where I stand. Very unsettling. On to you, Ken.
Yeah. So these are sort of my conclusions after, as we said, much thought. To our very patient audience, this is the last slide. I know you'll be disappointed, but we don't have any more after this one. I'm convinced that Heath Elementary students get a good education at Hallamont and that they get a good education at Mohawk Trail. We don't have any clear evidence that it's of economic benefit to Heath in joining Hallamont. We do have some indication that there are economic risks. At this point, to me, the risks and the costs of trying to get it out of one agreement and into another outweigh the benefits. Even if the voting issues, for example, could be resolved, we described the process of getting out and joining another district to you in the beginning because it's not a simple or quick process. So I think that it's extremely unlikely that it could be concluded this year, even if there was agreement on the regional agreement. And my understanding of the tuition agreement is we need to start discussing that this fall with Mohawk Trail. So my preference would be that he start those conversations with Mohawk Trail so that we can involve parents, for example, in the discussion about where Heath school children should attend school in 22-23. And I'll stop sharing now and turn it back to Budge.
So I just wanted to thank everyone for their patience and thank our select board for the opportunity to share what we have learned so far and kind of where we stand. I didn't get to see if Robin was able to join us. She wasn't. That's unfortunate. One of the challenges we've felt along the way that many of us have is just our ability to reach out and communicate to broader audiences. And that's something that this team can talk about on Thursday as we talk about do we have a clear recommendation to make to the select board and how we look at the future. There are a lot of unknowns and a lot of questions. But that's what we got, folks. Be great to give you all kinds of real shiny, nice, sparkly good news and solid conclusions and all. But sorry, it's not what we're dealing with. And I want to thank Evie and Suzanne and Martha for joining us. I know that they've been tracking what we've been doing, and I appreciate their taking the time to log in and listen to what we're doing. I hope it's been informative and helpful.
I'd like to thank Sarah, too, for both being here, but also for the amazing amount of clarity she brought to her piece of the puzzle. And it meant a lot to us. So thanks again.
Yep. Agree.
I want to thank all of you for the tremendous amount of work and research you've been doing. This has not been an easy process that you've been going through, and your dedication has been amazing, and I'm exhausted. So you must be. I'm tired just listening to it all. So thank you.
You remember those meetings, Sue.
Yeah. I too am deeply appreciative of the effort that was brought to this process and the expertise that was contributed. I'm kind of blown away. I didn't expect this kind of kind of report, this recommendations. It also indicated, there was information about the town of Poly that I had no idea, about their financial position compared to other towns. And I think this is a good illustration of the value of a process like this, of taking the time, the standing back, putting aside your prejudices and taking a good hard look at the data and coming to a conclusion. I just wouldn't have imagined we'd be here this soon, and I am very appreciative of all of your work. So thank you.
We will be getting a copy of the slides.
I'll send it to Hilma right now.
Okay. I really need some time to go back over it.
Yep.
Yeah. And Ken, I would like to send a copy of this to Superintendent Cheryl Stanton. I didn't let her know this meeting was happening. As superintendent of both districts, she is in, I think we can all understand, a rather awkward position. I do not wish to engage in any blindsiding. I want to share this with her if that's okay with you.
That's quite okay. And I should just add one thing, which is most of my day job is in part doing this kind of work in other places in the Commonwealth, but none of this was done for the Department of Education. And I do not have my Department of Education hat on today. I have my Heath Citizen hat on today. And even though we use some tools that have been developed in other places, this is not the opinion of anybody in the Department of Education. I had a long conversation with the Department of Ethics at DESE before I started this project about potential conflicts of interest, and they just made it clear that I have to be clear with what voice that I'm speaking. So when I send out the PowerPoint, I'm going to just put a couple of clauses in the email. So if you would send the email, forward the email so that people can read that as well. Basically, I would say any mistakes in the data are mine. They're not the Department of Education's. And if anybody finds anything that's incorrect, we want to have accurate information. I'd really appreciate that information coming back to all of us. But I'll send it out with those sort of qualifications. And after that, this is a public meeting, so it's public information. It can be sent out.
Great. Thank you, Ken, for all the work on the slideshow in particular. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
We all say goodbye.
Hi, Budge. Hey, Budge, are you there?
I am still.
Budge, it's Beth. I just wanted to let you know that I was here and that obviously I appreciate and have full understanding of everything that you and Bob have done. So.
Beth, great. I'm sorry. I didn't recognize your phone number.
No, that's okay. I actually misread the email because I didn't have my glasses on and I logged on early.
No, Beth, I am so glad you could join us. Thank you.
Okay.
And I would throw in that Beth was a really great partner and hope to work together on stuff. Thank you, Beth.
Thank you, guys. Everybody have a good night.
All right. Thanks,
everyone who's not aware. Beth Flaherty is a Charlemont representative to the Hall-Lamont School Committee and is chair of Hall-Lamont Heath Regionalization Study. And begin to put more pieces together. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm out of here.
Last question: If somebody wants to view the recording of this, where will it be posted?
It will be posted on the Select Board page on the town website. And if you go to the Select Board page, there is then a link that I believe says meeting recordings or something like that.
Yes, meeting recordings.
Yeah. And you can go in there and find it by date. Is that correct, Pat?
Yes.
And they're kept for a while?
They're kept for quite a while. I have none have been removed so far.
Okay, great. Thank you again.
So before everyone can go. Okay. Hi, can I jump in and ask a question to the Select Board? You can hear me okay? I unmuted, mm-hmm. Yes. So hi. So here we are moving forward. There's more data collection that we expect back from some of our financial partners. This TMS is working on a project that we gave them. And we just presented our thoughts and opinions so far of what we're collecting. I am curious. It is a shame that Robin's not here, and I'm certain Robin will watch the recording to catch up, and Hilma will get Robin the report, and we would all be available for questions if Robin has any. But I'm curious, Sue and Brian, other than the thank yous, which you're welcome, and never in a million years, you both should know that I had no idea I'd be sitting here in this complex situation. But I'm curious, how you thoughts from, you know, from each of you individually on, did you hear anything that you wish that we should pursue further, try harder, anything like that? Because, you know, the four of us are coming to you as individuals in the study team, but our study team is working at the pleasure of the Select Board, and the future is for the town resident student. So Budge and I have to go vote at Mohawk Trail School Committee, but it would be interesting. And I understand you may not have thoughts this evening because of how complex it was that we just presented, but like countertop thoughts or anything you can offer at this point?
I would say, I appreciate the opinions. I mean, you have studied opinions that you gave about this potential agreement. And, you know, I think we need time to digest the report. And I think we need to hear that report at some point needs to be distributed to the town, and that we need to get some feedback on that too. You know, because sometimes if people realize where things are going, they might respond to the to the issue at hand. But, you know, I just don't want to give an opinion. I think you have done a better job of formulating thoughts than I would at this point.
I would say that I agree with Brian. It's too much to absorb, but a lot of the questions that you have raised are questions that I've had for a while myself about the sustainability of and the possibilities of staying with Hall-Lamont. What's the benefit and what would be the benefit of staying with Mohawk? And you've brought me some information on those things that really helped me put everything into a better perspective and have confirmed that some of my questions were appropriate to be asking. but it's going to take some time to absorb all this and really think about it.
I'd also just like to let both of you know, and I've let our study team know prior to this, I personally am not in favor of asking Mohawk Trail to extend the tuition agreement of the 11-5 because we've exhausted that. So I don't think it's fair to the regional, the Mohawk Trail School District. So I just want you to know that that's where I stand on that. If that were to come up as a question on that school committee, I personally can't ask them to extend that any further than this coming. So I do feel that we're at the point of a decision-making process. And I do feel that you should have some time at the Select Board level, and I can ask for that time at the school committee level to digest some of this. And at some point, Budge and Bob will be delivering these opinions to the Holloman school district study team. So I don't know how we communicate back and forth, but I do think that we need to have lines of communication open as we go forward. And I know Martha's here and listening, and I appreciate that, but I'm sure I'll have questions for Martha in process. So, but thank you.
Thanks, Thea. Okay, we're ready to move on. I take it, Sue, did you have anything else you wanted to say or?
No, I'm not even sure where to go with it next. You know, it's just like a lot to think about.
We haven't heard any response from the broader community. We haven't heard any response because it's new from the Holloman community. Mm-hmm. So I think I don't want to talk about the municipal protocol or COVID-19 or the office relocation until we have Robin present.
Have you heard anything from her, Hilma?
No, I have not heard anything from her. And she had, when she called me to say she had this urgent situation come up with work, she thought she would be done and be joining the meeting at 7, which, you know, evidently is not the case. So,
well, we could go over the mail. Or do you want to do your report first, or would you rather do the mail first?
Well, I can do my report. I may need a little prompting because I guess I left the actual printed report, my copy, in the office, but I remember parts of it anyway.
Can you receive email? We could send it to you.
Yes, that's fine. If you send it to my home.
Okay. That's H, is it H-A?
Yep, that's the one.
Okay, I got it. I could have locked it over there by now.
I know.
Brian, sometimes it takes 15 minutes from one to get from your house to my house. So.
Okay.
First thing was minutes and treasurer.
Okay. Yeah, minutes. What's the next one? The treasurer?
Treasurer.
Yeah. So Chris Nardowitz has gotten started. She and Melanie met last Tuesday evening, I believe. Melanie turned over the records and office keys. So, you know, Chris is in the process of changing the account information at the town's various bank accounts and all that. But, you know, she's moving forward with great speed, I guess, in trying to get familiar with where things stand at the moment and what needs to be done. Just a side note, you know, the note is ready to sign. Again, another reminder, please come sign it. And let's see, next thing, Northeast IT. I spoke with our technicians, Sean and Doug, who reviewed the quote for the purchase and installation of a central server. I sent you folks the quote information that describes all the different equipment pieces that would need to be purchased. And all this expense for both the equipment and the installation is all covered under our IT grant. This is the third and final stage of what we were hoping to accomplish with the IT grant. So I don't know if you folks want to do it now or later, but if you would vote to accept the quote, then they can prepare the final document which is electronic, that would get signed. Robin said she was fine. She's very much in favor of this.
Okay, so, I'm perfectly willing to go through the quote mm-hmm. right now.
This is all covered under the IT grant?
Yes, yeah. It is.
The full thing? Okay. Yes. So, I move that we accept the quote for the purchase and installation of a central server from Northeast IT. Is that what you need for language?
Yep, that's fine.
Second, all in favor.
Sue, aye.
Brian, aye.
Okay, thank you. Next thing with Northeast IT. Sean was in Heath today. He was installing the correct components for the broadband hookup at each of the four municipal sites. I don't think he got done, but I'm not sure because he didn't check in with me when he left. And I know he was having some problems. Once again, I mean, it's like what he came and installed was fine. Then there was issues with something else. So I'm not sure how far he got. I do know when we were in the middle of the pre-session from the study team, the police chief stopped over to tell me that there's no internet, no phone at the town hall. So I'm not sure where that stands right now, but I have to believe we're making progress and that eventually it'll all work very well and we will have high speed internet. Let's see, the next thing, MassDOT has developed this new online program called GeoDot. It's an electronic mapping system for transportation infrastructure. It's, you know, really quite amazing. The maps have like multiple layers of data that can be looked at and obtained. The state is requiring this to be used as a part of, like, if a town applies for like a transportation infrastructure grant, there's certain work that has to be completed using this program. Both Jeff and I sat down with two of the state folks who are training on this system to go over not just like how to go on and view information like status of roads, but also how to use it in applying for grants. There is also an element in it that Jeff can go in when Jeff has work done, for example, he replaces a culvert or something. He can go in and add that information himself so that, and it's like he adds it, somebody at the state like reviews it and the state does the final kind of like marking on the map. However, it's like there is a way even for the local entity to keep the maps updated. We did that. As I said before, Robin and I met with Jonathan Diamond to discuss particulars about his proposal for a long-term lease agreement. We've got in here, you know, the different areas of the school that he would, that he's put in his proposal to want to lease. I think Robin and I were both of the same mind that there probably needs to be more discussion and negotiation, that probably the select board needs to have some discussion about it, and certainly then discussion with Jonathan and to work. Let's see, the next thing, the MVP kickoff meeting, which I had also talked about earlier. I felt it was very successful. I'm hoping we can get more people and a larger cross-section of Heath folks involved in this. And then the last thing is just to alert you as to my schedule. This Thursday, there is an all-day STEM conference in Northfield that I'll be going to. The primary focus is actually going to be on the American Recovery Plan funding and how, you know, different nuances of how towns can utilize the funds and things like that. And then the other thing, if I may have your permission, I would like, rather than taking more vacation time, I do have to take 2 days off, September 14th and 15th. I would rather work longer hours on the other days, and even if I need to work on that following Saturday to get in my hours that week.
I'm good with that.
I'm okay with it. Do you need a vote?
Sure.
I move that we allow Hilma to adjust her schedule as she's proposed in her town coordinator report.
Second. All in favor?
Sue, aye.
Ryan, aye.
Thank you very much.
All right. I guess I might as well do the mail. So we already talked about the first part is the Northeast IT proposal, which we talked about. Then we have a note from the Board of Health regarding review of the, I guess we talked about this too earlier with Barbara about the state guidance on
the mask policy.
Well, there are two emails. I guess it's one. And we have the draft of the mandatory policies and procedures from the state Department of Public Health. Then we have a note from Martha Thurber notifying us of the beginning of a Mohawk Trail Regional School District Rural Roundtable that they're hosting with Senators Adam Hines and Representative Natalie Blay, who are co-chairs of the Massachusetts Rural Commission. And the purpose of the roundtable is to highlight the issues facing rural schools, particularly regional schools, and their member towns. And we're being invited to attend. We just have to decide who wants to go, who can go. So it's on September the 23rd. Yeah, it's 11 o'clock a.m. to 1:30 p.m. I won't be in town then, so I'm not going.
Oh, come on, Brian, come back for it. And I imagine that Robin will be working, so I'll volunteer.
Okay.
Unless Robin really wants to go.
Well, one of the, perhaps one of or more of the regionalization study team would be interested in attending that.
I can email them and ask if anybody is able to go.
Okay. And then the next email was from David Gordon about the discrepancy, which we spoke about in the amount that was paid to Tri-Wire. And then we have a number of back and forth emails between Sheila and Hilma about the process for billing for, I assume it's for the drop costs that are in excess of $3,000.
Yeah.
And we have an email from Eileen Lively and announcing the foot clinic grant for $1,500 for 2022. I assume that's FY 2022.
Well, it actually, the grant's funny. It starts in October.
Yeah. Okay, so October 1st, 2021 to September 30th, 2022.
Yes.
So was Eileen responsible for getting that? Did she write that grant? Should we send her a thank you or?
Well, she did write it, but she wrote it a year ago. It's a 2-year grant.
And then there's a report from Claire Rabbit, the town nurse. Okay, and email part two. This is a note from Building Use Committee about I guess we need to vote to approve the.
That's all on the agenda, isn't it? Under other business, the building use policies.
The policy that was generated by the Building Use Committee and the rules. So I reviewed it. I don't know, Sue, did you review it?
I did. I've got it here somewhere.
Right.
I think I had a couple of questions.
Okay. Did you want to say what they were?
I'm trying to find them. actually, I don't see anything on that one. Let's see. Maybe not. Oh, I think that my I had a question on their concerns on the report, and then I had a question on their the building use division of responsibilities, but I didn't have anything on the use policy or the rental agreement. So for the use, do we have to review each part separately, I would think?
Well, there's the report and then there's the building use policy.
Okay. So okay. I didn't have any questions on the building use policy.
Yeah, didn't either. So I believe that.
So can we make a motion
to approve building use policy as submitted?
So move.
And I'll second that. All in favor?
Sue, aye.
Brian, aye. Did you remember what your question on the report was?
It was just on their report. On the last page, they had just written a concern about the maintenance of the ground.
Oh yeah.
So at some point, I assume we need to discuss that. It doesn't have to be tonight, but
yeah, I agree.
So it should probably be put on a future agenda. And on their requirements for the short-term private and community rentals.
Yes.
I think somewhere I saw that we have to approve the
fee schedule here.
The fee schedule, yeah. Is that right?
Yeah.
I have no issue with that.
Yeah, I didn't. I know they spend a lot of time figuring it out, so they know more about it than I do. So do we need to approve the whole form or just the fee schedule?
Well, we just voted on the
form. The whole form?
Yeah. Well, basically any kind of policies and all of that, the final approving authority is the select board.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because they're an elected committee.
All right. So I move that we accept the requirements for short-term private and community rentals, Heath Town Buildings policy from the building use committee as submitted.
I'll second that. All in favor?
Sue, aye.
And aye.
Okay. And then do we have to do anything with the building use division of responsibilities?
Well, if you're okay with it the way it's written, this is something that Pam and I spent some time together going over and kind of reworking from the original document in terms of what seemed practical, what had been working well, and then a few things that had not been clear, I guess, and thus not working too well. So we've made some adjustments.
Okay. I had a couple questions on this one.
Okay.
One thing is that there's a couple of lines that have a star at the end of them.
Okay.
Like manages long-term leases and rentals in accordance with select board negotiated agreements, and there's a little star. And somewhere else there was a star. I just don't know what the star is for. I'm thinking there's supposed to be something on here that tells us.
Offhand, I don't know either, but I can find out.
Okay. Oh yeah, there was a couple on the next page too. Issues and collects keys and reports custodial and maintenance needs. They have little stars after them.
It's not near the asterisk is not near the period, so that wasn't a typo.
So, and then under town coordinator, you had in parentheses under this one, issues, keys for town employees and committee members, and then in parentheses, and long-term leasers, ? So is that something that needs to be clarified?
No, probably the question mark should be taken out.
Okay, because it's in parentheses.
I'll see if I come up with the answer for the asterisk.
Okay.
While he's doing that, my other question was on the town coordinators, you have request financial reports, and I wasn't really clear what that meant.
Well, from time to time, it's like the building use committee says, hey, can you get an update from the accountant as to like where particularly the school building revolving use account stands or this kind of thing. And it's just been because it's helpful for me to know, like for the select board office to get an update as well. I've been requesting it from the accountant and then I'll pass it on to the committee.
Okay. So, and my one other thing was that on the second page under the, I think it's all under the Building Use Committee, on the second page, just was thinking it would be, it would read easier if you put all the financial pieces of that responsibilities together.
Okay.
Instead of having other things come in between the financial stuff.
Okay. So we can rearrange it.
Yeah. I just thought it would be a little clearer.
Yep. You're right.
And that's it. Oh, collect rents and deposits. That goes, the committee does that. The Building Use Committee collects the rents and deposits on the short term rents.
Yes, they do.
They don't go to, it doesn't go to you or to, it goes to them.
No.
That's it. What's the asterisk?
Yeah, the asterisk is there to flag the point to make sure that the town coordinator agreed with that.
Oh.
So it should be taken out.
So it can be eliminated. Okay.
So are we voting to approve this as submitted without asterisks?
Do we need to vote on this, Helma? Do you need a...
Sure.
I think it's very helpful because it is kind of confusing who does what.
That's right. Yeah. So I would entertain a motion to approve the Building Use Division of Responsibilities.
Okay. I would make that motion with the addition of as amended. While you were gone, we made a couple little changes in organization.
That's okay. I'll second that. All in favor?
Sue, aye.
Brian, this is a lot of work that people put into this.
This is a tremendous amount of work. They did a real, and it's very, very thorough. It seems like they covered a lot of ground. So thank you to them. Thank you to the committee for the work on that would probably be in order.
Okay. Oh, excuse me. I got a text from Robin, and she had driven to her meeting in a company truck, and it broke down. So
if you don't have bad luck, you don't have any, right?
He's out there somewhere.
Okay, so the mail part three, I don't understand this.
Oh, it's just the first thing. It's just that the state appointed a Western District Municipal Assistance Coordinator. It's just notification that the person has been appointed if municipalities want help in that area.
So it's just an announcement?
Yeah.
She's kind of like Jan. She's the Jan Amin of the state then.
Yes, she is. That's okay. The way I took it.
Yeah, all right.
Which probably means that Jan's going to be working a lot with her.
Yeah. The next item was Municipal Vulnerability Preparedness Program quarterly newsletter. We talked some about that. And there's a note about age-friendly communities in Franklin County and North Quabbin regions. And I believe that the Council on Aging is working on this, but we'll get a report from them later on.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
We're supposed to be meeting with them on Thursday.
Yes. So you should speak of this. Right. So that's it for mail. So we are not doing anything about the Board of Health member vacancies tonight because we have to review another resume. And Robin was going to have some information about the salt shed and the firehouse issues. So she's not here. We'll have to do that another time.
Mm-hmm.
So Hima, is there anything else we need to address tonight?
Well, the next meeting, like when will it be held?
Are we going to skip over the office relocation and protocol review?
I think that we should wait for Robin to weigh in on
it. I just wanted to make sure we weren't missing it.
No, I mentioned that earlier.
Yeah.
So I won't be here next week. Actually, the next two meetings, the next two Tuesdays. So I guess the 21st would be our next regular meeting. So it'll be two people here.
Okay, so the next meeting would be September 21st?
Yes.
Okay.
Otherwise, we have to go to the following week, which that seems like it might be too long.
I think it probably is. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So we're going to meet on the 21st?
You and Robin would meet on the 21st.
You can Zoom in.
The internet was pretty shaky in this place, so I'm not
positive that not planning on it. Yeah. How are we going to set? This is when we were supposed to review the 2-week cycle that we've been on and how it was working. Yeah. Whether we were going to continue doing that and yada yada yada. But well, we don't have 3 people this week, and we won't have 3 people the next time.
I would accept what you and Robin decide on that. I can live with it.
Uh-huh. Do you feel like it's been working okay, the 2-week cycle?
It seems to. I mean, I'm trying to think if there's anything we haven't been able to get to. And we scheduled an extra meeting mm-hmm. last week. You know, things get ahead of us. So, and anyway, you and, you know, I'll accept whatever you and Robin decide.
Okay. All right. Well, I would like to hear from Robin and Hilma too about that, because they probably bear the brunt of, if there's extra things that need to be dealt with, they're probably carrying the burden of that if we're not getting to them in a timely fashion. So.
Yeah.
I think we're doing okay right now. And I think as we, you know, go further into the fall and winter, that perhaps as we keep close watch on it, you know, like maybe set a couple of meetings out and then look at, okay, are we still doing okay meeting every other week?
Mm-hmm.
And if something comes up like it just did last week, then we have an extra meeting. But
yeah, I can see where when budget season and preparing for annual meeting, once every other week might not be enough. But anyway, put it on next week's agenda and we'll.
Okay, so that's one agenda item. The other ones are the balance of the other business that we couldn't address tonight, the COVID-19 municipal protocols and concerns, review of the Board of Health is going to recommend a masking policy, or they're going to adopt the state policy, it sounds like. So we'll have to review that. And the office relocation plan, I'm sure that Robin will have some things to add this week.
And I had a bunch of little things that I got from the minutes that were just little follow-ups. And I don't know, do you want me to just send you a list of those, Hilma, and to see if they got done? Was it things like you were going to get information from other towns about how their policies for getting, appointing volunteer, appointing people to boards and yes, COVID concerns from Charlene and idling vehicles and all that stuff.
Okay. Well, I can give you a quick thing. I'm still working on the policies from other towns. Thing about appointments. Let's see, Charlene has no concerns. Okay. She said people have for the most part, there's been 1 or 2 exceptions, but for the most part have been very respectful. You know, already almost everybody is coming in with a mask on, this kind of thing. And let's see, the other thing, what was the third thing you mentioned, Sue?
The idling the vehicle regulation.
Oh,
that. We never did anything about that, right?
No, we didn't. Although I've heard from the police department that it's like, it's state law. It's state law. It's enforceable by the police. And it's for the state law. I mean, it's anywhere. It's not just in the town center.
And then the alleged road assessed value?
I'm working on that as well. I sent an email to Alice and she comes in and works in Heath tomorrow.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
One issue that occurs to me is that we've been talking about the possibility of allowing the Heath Historical Society to place a structure on that property on Ledge Road. And you know, the complications of making that happen, either through some kind of lease agreement or sale, I think need to be worked out up further. We did mention this RFP process that, I mean, this all has to go through town meeting, but, you know, I think we need to explore the RFP process for sale of the property to a nonprofit, or what things can we put in that RFP that would serve the greatest interest of the town. So that's one agenda item that I'd like to have on there for future discussion.
Okay.
All right.
Are we done?
I think we are. Time for supper.
I move we adjourn.
All right. Second. All in favor?
Sue, aye.
Brian, aye.
Don't forget to sign the paperwork tomorrow.
I will. Yes,
please. And there's warrants. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Good night.